we've had a profound revelation.
Yeah, like 101 episodes, 102 episodes by some counts, by some reckoning.
Into the hundreds, we are into triple digits here, and we have only just now realized that if we started recording the second we sit down and get into this video call.
Yeah, it turns out
we could catch all these false start cold opens before they happen.
Man, that would we have lost so many good cold opens. We could do at least two more cold open episodes with the stuff we've lost.
All these cold opens like tears in the rain.
If we do a cold open and no one's there to hear it, did anything open at all?
We're too early in the episode to answer these such questions. So far we've had you schooling your wife on the realities of rental internet access.
Yeah, we're getting ready to go on a trip, and it's like an away, but I'm still working, and my intent is to still stream. Like, I'm taking my desktop PC with me. So she was like, okay. I was like, my first question when she's like, hey, check out this place. It looks amazing. It's got like three bathrooms. There's a pool. Like, Bay Area realities are like, any place with more than one toilet, I'm good. Like, that's all I'm excited about at this point. But she sends me these amazing places. I'm like, hey, what's the internet like? She's like, let me ask. And then she says, okay, they got 200 megabits down and 10 megabits up. I was like, nope, that's not going to do it. She's like, okay. This one says he has 40 megabits down and 20 megabits up. I was like, okay, we're kind of in the realm there. That might be doable. She's like, well, what do we have? 20 megabits up sounds great. And I was like, we have 1,000 megabits down and 1,000 megabits up. She's like, oh.
Eyes like dinner plates.
Yeah. Anyway, we found a place with fiber as the TLDR.
Great, great. How many bathrooms, though? I mean, I guess the bathrooms.
Three bathrooms.
Oh, wow.
And a pool.
The best of all possible worlds.
Yeah. I'm excited about a pool. I'm not going to lie. I want to get up in the morning, go for a swim, you know, shake the cobwebs out in the pool.
Okay. So there was that one. There was the one that ended up with us spitballing about a USB powered shock collar for me.
I don't know. Is talking about that one going to make the thing that the USB shock collar would help better or worse?
I don't know. I've spent a lot of time editing myself the last few weeks.
Oh no, never. Don't ever listen to yourself, Brad.
I mean, it's agonizing. Don't get me wrong. Like, it is nails on a chalkboard for hours on end. But the upside of editing yourself is you realize all of the awful verbal tics that you need to just eliminate up front. Uh-huh. So you then don't have to edit them later.
So I'm going to tell you a thing that our departed friend Ryan Davis told me early on in the days of Tested, which is, Because like, I did this on the first. If you go back and listen to like episode 1 through 5 of the Tested podcast, I went through and spent 4 hours every night after we recorded that, editing out all the ums and the pauses and the hitches.
It's awful.
And Ryan listened to it. And he's like, sometimes you just got to let the room breathe, man. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? He said, you just got to let the room breathe. I don't know if he knew what it meant, but I stopped editing out the ums and the pauses and the things that annoyed me about the way that I speak on the reg. So,
and no complaints.
No one complained. No one even noticed.
Yes.
So there you go.
For me, it's an occasional kind of halting manner of speech in the middle of sentences, like long pauses, and that break up my thoughts. And also, I talk over you too much. And so that's where the shock collar came in, because I said, I think I just need to learn to control myself more. And then this would be we would obviate the problem up front and not have to fix it on the back end.
We had Chloe, rest in peace, had a vibrating collar that was an anti-bark collar. It wasn't a shock collar, but it had like, it made a buzzing noise, and it like had a little rumbler in it that when she would bark, it would rumble. And she did not like that at all.
That sounds both effective. And see, I just talked over you. That sounds both effective and humane, as opposed to a shock collar, which I don't think we can endorse in any context.
I think the shock collar is bad unless it's consensual on both ends.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Yes, that's the one context.
Yeah.
A shock collar is permissible.
And just to be clear, the dog could not give consent to the shock collar.
Yes, that's not.
Barks do not indicate consent.
Right. Well, once Facebook realizes its grand plan for the metaverse, maybe dogs will be able to talk to us and express their.
Look, if you could elevate, one of my favorite like 60s science fiction tropes is the idea that we were going to start elevating different animals to human or near human level sentience. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't going to be for purely capitalistic means.
Wait, through like genetic engineering or animals
genetic engineering that are technology, you know, a little from column A, a little from column B,
not animals that are almost there already, like dolphins and elephants.
I think you start with the dolphins and the pigs and the elephants. Yeah,
yeah,
probably maybe the octopodes,
the octopi. Yeah.
But no. Yeah. The idea is that like just out of the goodness of our heart, because we want to share our universe with more intelligent species, because there's nothing out there. We elevate the chimpanzees and the dogs and the dolphins and the and the and the and, you know, the octopi. Where would you start? What's your first animal you'd elevate?
Like, what animal would I want to hang out with?
Yeah. Which animal would you like to like have a chat with?
What animal would I like to crack a beer with and just chill?
Yeah. Would you like pick the pigs, or like you think that like their needs are relatively straightforward, maybe not interesting to talk about?
Yeah. I don't know that there's a lot going on upstairs there.
The popcorning is very compelling.
It's true. I mean, they communicate so much through body language already.
That's true.
God, who would be chill? I'm trying to think of a primate with a prehensile tail, because I think that would be pretty great to just be like, hey, could you pass me another beer and have the tail hand the beer over?
I think the tail's too close to the butt for me. I'll tell you, I would go with geese. I want to find out why geese are such assholes. Be like, hey, man, what's wrong with you? You got it all. You swim all the time. You poop anywhere you want with reckless abandon. Like, you have a good squeaker. You make good noises. Why are you so upset all the time, man? Nothing eats you.
Some things are better left to the internal monologue, I think.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
Hello, Brad.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah. It's Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing my jammy pants. I just had an iced coffee. I'm good to go, man.
About to take a little trip down south.
I got the full podcast brain ready to go. Well, I got another week before the trip. We're leaving on Sunday.
Yeah, but it's pending. You know it's coming. So you've got that lift. You've got the, you know, little spring in your step, knowing that a fun trip is on the way.
I haven't left the house in 18. I haven't left my county really in 18 months.
Boy, that's all. I mean, you guys have really been battening down the hatches.
I mean, we have no threat profile, so there's no reason for us, like, other than sanity, there's no reason for us to do anything that we don't have to.
It seems like sanity is a key consideration. Sanity, to be fair.
It's becoming more important every day. I'm not going to lie.
Yes. So you do reach a breaking point sooner or later.
I've been to San Francisco a few times, and I went over the San Mateo Bridge to pick up a bike in Hayward one day, but that's it for my dog.
You guys are like still ordering groceries and everything, the whole thing?
Yeah, we do curbside pickup sometimes, but mostly ordered. Yeah,
man,
it's kind of expensive, it turns out. Yeah. I was looking at our grocery bill for the last year versus the 10 years before. I was like, wow, it doesn't seem like it's that much more expensive, but it really sneaks up on you.
Yeah. It's a working trip though, right? Like how much stuff are you hauling down there? Like how many computers are coming with?
I'm bringing a desktop and a laptop.
Okay.
And then, I mean, the thing is, we're literally not leaving the house when we get down there. We might go to like Joshua Tree or something like that and do some hiking or something, but it'll be like shorts and t-shirts. So there's not a lot of clothing that needs to come.
Sure.
So we're going to load as much shit into the Bolt as we can and hit the road. It's a small car, though.
Pray that the battery doesn't explode or whatever it is that's going on there.
So, announced a recall for our car. This is a follow-up for a past episode. They don't have the batteries yet, so we can't get it done until after they have the batteries, so it'll be a little while.
Oh, is it just a battery swap?
It's just a battery swap.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. So, well, enjoy. And
we've only put like 1,200 miles on the car, so it's not like, you know,
we'd probably be fine.
Yeah, there's nothing on the batteries to date. So, anyway.
This is basically just a change of house then.
Yeah, we wanted to go. Well, I mean, we normally would have taken a vacation in the summer, but I just started a new job, so that was inconvenient. And my wife and daughter would like to be someplace else for a while, which I think is fair.
Yeah. Cannot blame you.
Yeah. I'm excited about it, too, frankly.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time in this room.
I mean,
a lot of time.
It's a pool. It is a pool, a swimming pool.
There's water that's accessible that I can put my entire body into.
Get in there whenever you want.
Yep.
Then you could get out and then you could get right back.
You just described like every Saturday for the next month.
You could go to the pool like a dozen times a day if you wanted.
This is also the first time we've taken a road trip in the like a multi-charge road trip in the electric car.
Oh, huh.
So, that should be
interesting. How long is the drive?
Well, it's like an 8 hour drive, but it's 10 hours because we have to charge twice, I think, probably.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. I would like to hear about that experience.
Well, we can talk about it a week after next.
Yeah. All right.
Well, what are we talking about today, Brad?
What are we talking about today? This is kind of a grab bag episode. I guess this evolved out of some current events, and we are very loosely attempting to tie them all to the same theme of, I don't know, market disruption, market upheaval, events going on in specific spaces that are sort of shaking some things up.
Look, we used to call this a potpourri episode, and then we were going to stop because of some Jeopardy nonsense that's happened. And now that seems like it's cleared up. So maybe we can go back to calling it a potpourri episode.
I don't know the potpourri Jeopardy connection. I don't know what that reference is. Is that a category?
Yeah. Potpourri on Jeopardy is the category that's like a little bit of everything.
Now I remember. I haven't watched Jeopardy in a very long time.
It's got some lavender. It's got a little bergamot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different smells.
I don't know if that's like that intensely tied to Jeopardy that the word potpourri is poisoned now. But
what about potent potables?
That one definitely.
Okay.
Okay. For sure.
Okay. So let's kick this off. Yesterday, something that struck very close to home for me, maybe day before yesterday now, I can't even remember. Zuckerberg went on CBS this morning to showcase Facebook's metaverse.
Mm-hmm. Or the first phase of it. Should we real quick maybe just run down all the stuff we'll be covering here? We're going to talk about this Facebook metaverse nonsense.
Yes.
Which is literally the header that I wrote in our show notes to describe it. Talk about stuff going on with Intel. They've got these desktop GPUs coming that actually sound like they might be worth something.
Well, yeah, they did Architecture Day this week, which is where they kind of showcase, hey, it's not like what's coming out in the next 6 months or a year. I mean, there's a little bit of that, but it's also, here's what our 5-year plan is basically for CPUs and other silicon.
Yeah. So yeah. And hybrid stuff, hybrid design updates about their CPUs. And then this OnlyFans situation.
So OnlyFans, the site for sexually explicit material on a pay-per-view basis, is now banning sexually explicit material, is my understanding.
Yes, that is the case.
It sounds pretty straightforward when you put it that way, but there's kind of a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. So
anyway, a lot of stuff going on in the news that we just thought like, oh, these are big events in these respective spaces. So let's maybe talk about them, go over them. And the Facebook stuff, like your tweets about your experience building VR stuff similar to what Facebook is doing now, or exactly why I wanted to talk about this.
Yeah. So the thing they announced is called Horizon, Workrooms Horizon, and it's an Oculus Quest thing. And the basic idea is you get in a room with everybody has their cartoon avatars on. You run a desktop program on your computer. You can put your screen up on a wall screen there. And it's like a fake conference room in VR that you can have a conference with people. And you don't have to use the controllers. It just hand tracks using the front facing cameras on the Quest. If you have a keyboard that it recognizes, it'll put your keyboard in it treats the keyboard like a fiducial. So it can place it accurately in the 3D space inside the VR headset. So you can look down, your hands will be in the right place when you put them on your virtual hands, and your physical hands will line up in the real world with the real keyboard.
I'm sorry, could you repeat? It treats it like a what?
Fiducial.
A fiducial?
A fiducial is a mark that is computer readable in orientation and position. Huh. So like a QR code is a kind of fiducial.
Okay.
If you ever saw the pictures of Valve's early VR rooms, they had all these QR codes pasted on the walls all around the room. And the cameras track the QR codes. The AR camera for the 3DS.
Sure.
Remember that little thing you chucked down and then yes. Mario would grow out of it?
Yeah.
That's a fiducial.
They're tracking points.
Tracking points.
So it's kind of like in like motion capture and stuff like that, or reference points, fixed reference points.
Exactly. So in the early days of computer, of this kind of tracking, you had to use some really specific, really blocky things that were unique in every direction. Now, because our computing and machine vision stuff has gotten a lot better in the last 5 years, Facebook can recognize a handful of keyboards. So from the key layout and the positioning and the colors and all that stuff, they can pick it out and be like, OK, this is a keyboard. I know what it is. I know what its orientation is, and I know where it is in the world.
That's legitimately kind of neat. And also, it seems like they need to knock down as many barriers as they can.
Oh, that's barrier. I'm going to go and tell you, somebody who's used a lot of VR with a headset on sitting in front of a computer without being able to see where your keyboard is in the world, it's maddening.
Yeah, I'm sure. I believe that. But also just generally, I mean, you know, I've done enough VR coverage in the game space and stuff to tell you, at least from my perspective, it's a big ask to get people to strap that headset on all the time, unless what you are offering them in there is incredibly compelling or useful. And I don't know that this, meets that bar.
So full disclosure, in 2015, I quit, tested, and started a company called Foo. We started building basically software that used the 3 data points or more, if you had them, to generate believable human avatars.
Yeah. Not entirely dissimilar to what we're talking about here.
I mean, it was exactly what we're talking about here, without the desktop shit and the keyboard, just to be clear.
Yes. I mean, that's your tweets. I mean, you touched on that. You're a visionary. You saw what was coming.
There's so many self-described visionaries in the world. We don't need any more, but I'll take it. So we started with, hey, maybe we could do conferencing. And then we looked at the number of headsets that were likely to be in the world for the next 5 years. And we're like, no, we shouldn't do this. We will run out of money way before there's enough people to pay money for the thing that we're making. Facebook's not in a situation where they have to worry about the amount of money coming in. So it's a different business for them. And also there's a lot more headsets now.
Yes. That's true. Do you have a sense of, I mean, this is a way bigger question and I don't know a ton about it, but do you have a sense of what Facebook's prospects for the future are like, in terms of, like, you hear all the time, you know, like Facebook's user base is getting older, you know, it's like kind of the social media for old people. It's not like young people are signing up for Facebook accounts all the time. Like, things go on in the ad space all the time.
They keep buying new networks that are bringing in younger audiences. Like, that's why they bought Instagram, because it's skewed younger. Yeah,
sure, sure. But I guess what I'm asking is, are like they hedging against a potential future where what seems like their like bedrock pillars of revenue right now maybe suddenly aren't as steady as they used to be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They spent money on Oculus, right? That's why they spend money on all of these emerging technologies. And that's why they're building hardware that lets you talk to people. You know, like, that's why they have a video conferencing product. That's why they do it's because their main business is the social network, unlike Google and Netflix and Microsoft and Amazon and all these other, like, Amazon's main business is selling stuff on a store and selling servers to people who use stuff on the internet. Right.
Right.
So,
like, that business is never going away.
You don't age out of buying groceries or buying toilet paper.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Facebook is unique in that situation. Yeah, Apple isn't worried about people not buying phones anymore.
Right.
For the foreseeable future, at least.
Yes. Yes.
So it's a conference room. It's like bad Zoom with no facial expressions. Now, the thing I will say is, having done, like, when we were at Foo, we did a lot of our standups and meetings and stuff in the studio space that was very similar to this, much way rudimentary compared to what they're doing here. And it only ran on PC. But even meeting with my engineer and my main artist, we were meeting in the space. We only had one avatar at the time, so everybody was dressed up as me, right? Everybody looked just like me. But they're all different heights.
You're not just a visionary, you're also a megalomaniac.
Look, the avatars were unbelievably expensive to make, Brad. We couldn't afford to make some just for fun.
Oh, man. The idea of the boss making everybody dress up like him is...
This makes me sound like I'm...
That's too sinister for, like, bad cyberpunk fiction.
I'm like John Malkovich in a Transformers movie. So when I met my lead engineer for the first time after working with him for like a year and a half in person, my brain knew him. Like, this is the weird, cool thing, is because we were picking up enough body language, just inferring how your shoulders are moving, from the way your hands are moving, and the way your head's moving. Like, my brain was like, oh, hey, I know you, even though you usually look like me and have a lot of fewer, resolution on your face. I know what you look like. I know how you move, and I recognize that. And I was instantly comfortable with this person who I'd literally never talked to in person before.
That's kind of amazing, actually. Like, you just picked up enough personal idiosyncrasies. That's really cool.
Well, and so the other thing about it is, you gain all of the kind of gestures and motions and things that we do when we're talking, like on Zoom, I don't see anything below your chin, basically, right? Your shoulders are in, but like your left hand, how you're moving your left hand, if you're waving your left hand around like you want to talk, I don't see that. You don't see me moving my hands below the screen, even though I'm going like this. And like, even the stuff like the shoulder movements doesn't translate as well into 2D space. So you get that stuff as well if they do it right. So like there is an argument that it is a much more personal you're much less likely to do things like talk over each other and like kind of have sentences crash into each other. You don't have to do stuff like mash the raise hand button in Zoom to let people know that you want to talk, stuff like that. The downside. Okay, first off, this isn't the metaverse.
Right, which is I think we need to address that topic as well.
So
we'll get there.
Well, so what is the metaverse? Metaverse came from a 1992 book by Neal Stephenson called Snow Crash. It's great. Everybody should read it. It's not at all timely or it's relevant. It's not at all timely. Like the depiction of the metaverse in that book is laughable and ridiculous by today's standards, but it's very fun.
Yeah.
The meta and metaverse means it's all of the systems talking to each other.
Okay.
And
that is the most concrete definition of the metaverse that I've heard from anyone.
Yeah. So do you remember in like 1995 when Carmack was tweeting plan files about Quake? And he was like, yeah, you're gonna be able to open a portal in your Quake server and like go through and you'll go to Brad's Quake server.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that. Writ large.
But not just between Brad's Quake server and my Quake server. It's between my Fortnite server and your Quake server and Facebook's Horizon server and all this other thing.
And your Roblox and every instance of everything on the internet. Yes.
Yeah. So Facebook is trying to build a tool set that they're going to describe as the metaverse that I would bet will live entirely within the confines of Facebook's servers.
Yes, that sounds a little limiting, but yes, that does seem to be their MO.
Now the cool, actually kind of maybe a little metaverse-y way to do this is to like just build an avatar infrastructure that then you make open source and accessible to everybody else on the burgeoning metaverse.
It's like Gravatars for VR, for 3D.
Well, when you put it like that, it sounds stupid, but yes.
I mean, my Gravatar still works to this day.
Can you change those?
Yeah. I have no idea, actually. I have the same one that I set up in 2008. Let me even
see. Yeah, mine's been the same since for like 15 years now, and I can't change it.
Every once in a while, I will sign up for a new service, and there it is.
Yeah.
After all those years, there is that little Pac-Man grenade that I set up so long ago.
Oh, that's your... Okay, that makes sense.
Gravatar is owned by Automattic, the WordPress.
Oh, huh. That'll come up later.
I don't know what Automattic is. I really don't. I'm not clear.
Automattic makes WordPress.
No, I know that. Well, I guess what I mean is I don't know what to call WordPress. I don't know. Is it a business?
CMS.
I know. But I mean, like as an entity,
it's not a company.
Corporation, is it? Like they don't have a standard like corporate revenue model is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah, they sell. You can pay money to host WordPress.
Okay. You can also self-host for free.
Yeah, of course. It's an open source project.
Okay.
So or maybe it's not open source. I don't remember.
It's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Okay. It's a services and software. Anyway, it's software as a service is what it is.
Okay.
Okay. But okay. So metaverse. The other thing that you should know about metaverse is about 6 months ago, the venture capital community got really excited about metaverses. And as a result, if you take your deck from like 2 years ago and change whatever the hot word was then to metaverse and pitch it around.
Find a place.
Yeah. You'll get a lot of money.
Oh my God. That's disgusting. That is the real reason I wanted to bring this up and laugh about it because...
Yeah, it's fucking stupid.
As much as I have asked over the last few months, like, what the fuck is the metaverse? The only conclusion I've really come to is it's whatever you can convince investors it is, right?
Yeah, if you're like, yo, I got, let's see, I've got a blockchain-based social audio network that is going to add Facebook's avatar support, and I need to raise $20 million, probably you get somebody to write a check for you there. Maybe not for 20 mil, but like you can get seed money for sure.
But I mean, at some point, the rubber has to meet the road, right? Like you have to turn that money into. Yeah, but there's no more money then if you don't turn it into something actionable, right?
That's a problem for people down the line. By that point, the board will replace you and you'll still have your equity.
I guess. Yeah. OK, that's fair. We are way past the point in this process where like every company now has said, like, well, what's our metaverse solution, right? Like, what's our metaverse plan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And realistically, like. So the people who are thinking about this in a real way are like Tim Sweeney and Mike Abrash and John Carmack probably. And then also a bunch of people that are working on like OpenXR, mm-hmm. which is an open web like framework for VR, AR, MR stuff. I think in my like VR ML sprung out of the original metaverse conversations.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Well, you're talking 90s VRML?
Yeah, 90s VRML.
Oh, my God. I haven't thought about that.
We've been doing this this is the second or third wave of metaverse talk.
Yeah.
This is like, so the thing is, the idea of the metaverse is inherently antithetical to the way walled gardens have worked for the last 15 years on mobile. A lot of VCs are treating it like mobile, like the next iteration from the personal computer to the mobile to the this. When in reality, what they're talking about is maybe an interoperability layer between different services and platforms, is the worst case. But the best case is that we actually are like, yo, maybe apps are bad and we should go back to building stuff on open frameworks instead.
Yeah.
Which is the way I would like the pendulum to go. I don't know if it actually will. Also, one more thing. Two more things, actually. One is that VR stuff has major accessibility issues, especially on mobile. Mm-hmm. Facebook's headsets especially are because they're mobile, they run at a lower frame rate. More people have motion sickness issues with them. The latest data is that somewhere at least 5% and probably no more than 10% of people are just, their brains are incompatible with VR.
Oh, wow.
And it tends to skew more towards women than men because of the way women perceive depth. Because estrogen brains perceive depth differently than androgen brains, is my understanding. Mm. It has to do with shading versus parallax. Also, the science on that is kind of unclear, so don't at me.
Grain of salt.
Rephrase. The data on number of people who get motion sick is pretty solid. The data on why that happens is entirely speculative. It's mostly speculative at this point.
I see.
Also, disabled people have a major problem. Many disabled people have problems using VR stuff, depending on like what the nature of their disability is. So that's a major concern. So like Facebook has been using this internally for conferences. I don't think I would not want to work at a company where we require Facebook Horizon conferencing because it's shitty for women and disabled people and people that get motion sick.
Right. And it's just a hassle for everyone. That's well, like even without these like health issues, without accessibility issues, if VR was perfect for everyone, it's still a big ask to strap yourself into what is basically a sensory deprivation chamber. Like the trade-off of shutting yourself off from your immediate surroundings has got to be pretty good, right? Like the thing you were asking people to do that in order to gain has to be amazing. And like, not much of this stuff is amazing yet.
Well, and then the other thing on the accessibility side is also, if you have a large head, Facebook headsets don't really work for you. Like my head is at the high end of upper limit of what you can wear on an Oculus headset generally. Yeah. So, by the way, Facebook announced this thing on the morning news instead of like doing an ad campaign or something, because coincidentally, the same day the FTC announced that they were reopening the antitrust investigation into Facebook. Weird sequence of events there.
Couldn't possibly be related at all. That was also part of why I was asking if this is just Zuckerberg's pet like metaverse strategy, or if there might be other goals being served here.
Hey, we need to get some news in the queues so that we drown out this antitrust business. What do we got?
Weird. Yeah, how that happens. All right. Can we declare the metaverse dumb until further notice? Until somebody comes up with something better.
I don't think we're any closer to the metaverse than we were 2 years ago right now. Okay, Intel's Architecture Day had some interesting stuff.
Yeah. Big dot little, are we pronouncing the dot?
I was going to say big little.
Big little.
Big little.
Big little.
That's big fun. Little.
Big little. Big little performance course.
Yeah, so this is their new architecture stuff. So Architecture Day, like I said, is when they hit the long-term plans with a little bit of near-term. And we don't need to talk too much about the architecture stuff, except to say it looks like they're going to move long term to a chiplet type architecture like AMD's been using, where they build multiple chiplets are put on each core on each CPU, and then they're connected with high speed interconnects.
Right, like a discrete controller in there.
Exactly.
But that's not these new ones. That's not these like the Alder Lake, like the very short term products are still the more traditional single package, right?
Yeah, the Alder Lake and the next one after that, which I don't remember what it is are both more monolithic die designs. The Chiplets will come after that, which is like 2024, I think.
Okay.
2023.
Okay.
But the Big Little architecture is neat because they're taking cues from the SoCs, the work that ARM has done, and right. Apple and Qualcomm and all those folks are doing with ARM SoCs. And I'm like, this is the second try for this. They did this with Lakefield a few years ago, where they had basically a high power core and low power cores in the same die. And the idea is that the low power cores do the stuff that's kind of always running, like background tasks, keeping the OS going, your stuff that runs in your system tray, that kind of stuff. And then the high power cores are dedicated to the foreground processes like games and browsers and video and stuff like that.
Heavy compute stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the Lakefield was kind of a failure, but the assumption is that that's because of the ratio of big cores to little cores. I think Lakefield was one big core to four little cores.
Right.
And then also there's some understanding that Windows 10 maybe wasn't ready to take advantage of that. Windows 10 for x86 wasn't. And that this is one of the reasons we're moving to Windows 11.
Interesting.
Like more explicit support for this type of architecture.
So we're talking about like some of these newer chips down the line are more kind of one-to-one, right? With the performance to low power cores, like eight of each from the sound of it.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be between 4 to 8 little cores and 6 to 8 big cores.
Yeah. So I got kind of excited reading about this because like power consumption in CPUs has become kind of a concern of mine as I mean, not that it's the only consideration, but as PG&E continues to hike rates. Like how long my computer is on every day is a concern. How much gas it's guzzling. Essentially,
your computer, especially since the CPU is a little older, your performance per watt is probably bad.
It's not amazing. You're right. But So again, I got pretty excited. Like, oh, you could potentially like let your PC idle and use way less power. But then I started looking, and it's not like the big cores are getting any more efficient here. It sounds like they are just as gas guzzling as the previous several Intel chips have been, which have been awful in that regard.
Yeah, so the assumption here is that this is still on 10 nanometer, at least for the stuff that comes out next year. And the Intel 7 nanometer fab in Arizona doesn't come online until like 2024, is my understanding.
Oh, wow.
So, and I don't think Intel's ever built mainline CPUs on anybody else's foundries. So, there's a lot of questions. I think, like, the interesting thing is, they're going to be positioning 16 core Alder Lake S's with like 8 big cores and 8 little cores. And they're going to be like right now, even just Ryzen like 5900s are 16 core CPUs where they're all big cores essentially.
Right.
Or 12 cores rather. Sorry.
And with better performance per watt than the current Intel stuff.
Yeah. Like I don't think they talked about, some of the stuff is also based on rumors, we should be clear, but it's rumors that came out around the time of Architecture Day, probably when analysts were getting NDA'd briefings. So, you know, pretty good rumors, I would say.
Sure.
The interesting thing is that AMD has been living under the TDP these days, and Intel is the TDP at main operation. When it goes into turbo boost, it'll go above by 50 or 60 watts.
You mean you're talking about how they quote the numbers?
Yeah,
to the public.
The number of watts consumed for AMD is pretty much the maximum unless you do something like overclock.
Right.
Whereas with Intel, it's like the baseline that it can go up another 50 or 75 watts.
Yes, like this
under turbo boost.
Like this Ars story is talking about current Intel chips, which again, like these big little iterations are going to be using similar architecture, having like a stated TDP of 125, but boosting up to like 200 at load, which sounds completely insane.
That's pretty 200? High. Well, I mean, you know, it's only an eighth of what comes out of your wall.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, still.
These will be the 12 series chips when they come out. Okay. So not the 11 series that's out now. That kind of is like a pass, probably, even if you have a 10 series or a 9 series. So we'll see what happens when they actually ship silicon to reviewers and stuff in a few months, presumably.
I mean, you know, sticking with the theme of shakeups, like Intel itself has had a pretty big shakeup in the leadership there, right? Like, sure a company like this takes years to recenter, recalibrate. Well, after new leadership comes in and a new course is set.
Yeah, the R&D that goes into these chips is it's like a 5-year pipeline from like where they're starting. So the chips that are coming out next year started work in like 2017, 2018 probably.
Right.
And in reality, the designs that those chips are based on started another 5 or 10 years before that. So
right.
it's complicated, I guess.
It seems like they do have a roadmap to modernize, though.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of this is happening, too, because we're reaching the end of the process line. We've been talking about this for a long term. But the process technology, which is like basically the size of the transistors on each chip, has been getting smaller and smaller and smaller since the 60s. We're reaching the end of what we can do with that technology, how much smaller we can make them. The benefit for getting smaller is mainly that the gates use less power to trip, which means you use less power to do the computing, which means you can do more computing per watt, which means you can, you know, pump more energy in there, get more computing out of it and generate less heat. When you stop losing, like that process size advancement has driven a lot of what Intel did over the last 50 years. And that was their competitive advantage over AMD and you know, the ARM vendors and everybody for a long, long time. And that's going away. So they're like seeing how they adjust in this time of turmoil is really interesting. And the fact that, I mean, everybody said they were going to go for chiplets. They call them tiles. I mean, it's a major difference.
Chiplet is such a fun word, though.
I like saying chiplet. Yeah. But yeah, the upshot is, they're going to go with the same thing that AMD has been doing for the last couple of generations.
Right.
And it seems like the path forward for the next little bit, at least.
To be clear, when you say we are hitting the end of process shrinks, I mean, you're talking a physical end, right? A physical limitation on how much smaller we can get. Kind of similar to how we hit the frequency ceiling on silicon.
Well, the frequency ceiling is different. Basically we started out using lasers and now we've gone down to x-rays and we've run out of electromagnetic spectrum to make the lanes on the chips smaller.
Right.
So they're doing different things like making the gates narrower and turning them sideways and all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah. All I mean with when I say frequency ceiling, what I mean is like, you know, CPUs used to get faster just by the clock rate increasing, you know, it's like, oh, I have a 75 megahertz chip. Oh, now I have a 100 megahertz chip. Now I have a 200. Now I have a gigahertz. Holy crap. But, you know, what was it? Probably somewhere between 3 and 5 gigahertz, depending on your cooling and your overclocking, is about, we found, as high as we could possibly go with the current materials.
Well, it's not as high as we can go. It's as high as you want to go
or
for a multitude of reasons. Yeah. But all of those, like the difference between a Pentium 75 and a Pentium 100 or a Pentium, probably a Pentium 100 and a Pentium 200. I don't have to look. Was more or less like they went to 32 bit, I think, on the Pentium 2s, and added like SSE 2 and stuff like that. But also there was a die shrink in there too.
Okay.
That meant, hey, we can do more clock cycles because we have lower power requirements.
Right.
So we can generate more heat now.
So in both cases, though, those have become dead ends for further speeding up processors, right? Like with the clock speed and process size have kind of plateaued.
The process side informs the clock speed is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah. These things are all related.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying like you're not going to see these continuing to.
Yeah, we're not going to get to like, we're not going to go from 7. Like, okay. People are talking about angstrom scale. I don't know if it's real or not. It's you get into some real fuzzy math and some physics stuff that I don't understand. So.
Yeah. And I see people saying like, oh, you know, like TSMC has multiple 7-nanometer processes that are different, even though they're the same size and they'll, you know, that's a very arcane world that I barely understand, but it does sound like you're not going to see like 1 nanometer anytime soon or anything like that.
No. And there's also a big difference between like a 7-nanometer process for memory and a 7-nanometer, you know, the way you build the foundries for memory and like compute silicon are different, right? Like they have different characteristics and different requirements and different sensitivities. So yeah. Anyway, that's it. That's the CPU side. Should we you want to bump over to the GPUs while we're talking about Intel?
Yes, that actually seems like the big deal here is that Intel finally. I mean, it's been rumored for a while. They had what was it called, the DG1? Was that the code name for that desktop part that we talked about like a year ago?
They announced a low power XELP is, I think, what the tech name is for it.
Yeah, but now they've fully announced Intel Arc is the actual name that they're going with, the marketing name. But they've got their own line of proper desktop GPUs coming finally, which, like, immediately my first question to you as someone who's worked in the tech press for ages, like, has this been an ongoing thing for a long time? Like, was there kind of always an Intel line of GPUs rumored to be around the corner?
There have been rumors about Intel. So Intel killed the I-series. They weren't even GPUs back then. They were just video cards in like 2000, maybe 99 or 98. It was like before I worked at Maximum PC. From that moment on, there were always rumors about Intel making new GPUs.
Okay.
I mean, mainly because they've been making GPUs this whole time that go in the integrated chipsets.
Right.
Like, those are still graphics cards.
Yes.
They're shitty and underpowered, and they're built on the same process size as the GPU, as the CPU. But they count, kind of. Then there was Larrabee, which was had they kept going on Larrabee the way the machine learning stuff worked out, they probably would have been in a spectacular place. But it was like a real, basically their whole idea was we're making a massively parallel x86 processor for use in graphics. So instead of having to do, like, instead of using these low power, really low power, you'd have like mid power, massively parallel CPUs or GPUs. I don't know. It's interesting. So Arc is, it looks real. I don't know what they released. They announced Who knows? They announced it. Yeah.
They put out a very slick video of them talking about it. I hope it's real.
I don't think they've gotten this far that they were actually talking about a GPU in public before and then killed it. Usually they like told us it was coming and then killed it without it actually announcing names and stuff. So I think giving it a name is, you know, it's like, yeah, you don't want to name something you're going to kill.
Right.
So it's a full DX12 feature set, ultimate feature set. So ray tracing, mesh shaders, sampler feedback, variable rate shading, the whole thing. They have a neural net driven upscaling, aka DLSS type upscaling feature.
How are we saying this? XESS?
XESS is how it was pronounced during I went to the video and watched the video until I could find somebody saying it so I would know.
Okay.
And that is, I want it to be XS.
Yes. Yes. And that is ML driven like DLSS, unlike the what's AMD's Fidelity FX, which is not.
Yeah, it's that the Fidelity FX thing, as I understand it, was basically is based on an upcoming or maybe existing now DirectX thing, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, and that seems to have been a pretty big whiff.
I don't. So the version of it they launched with didn't support machine learning, which is underwhelming, and also nobody supported it. It's going to be the same as what's in the consoles. So when that stuff comes to consoles, it'll come to the AMD stuff pretty much immediately.
Sure.
Basically the interesting thing about this is they're throwing out all of the old stuff that they were doing in the integrated chips. They announced multiple years of products and they're structured much closer to, say, the way Ampere is structured internally, where there's these cores that they call XE cores that have vector engines and matrix math engines that then attach to L1 caches that then attach to like ray tracing units and samplers and all the things that let them talk to each other. And then those connect to L2 caches and schedulers and all that to make them all work together. And you can modularly scale them up from, like, I think one or two of these all the way up to eight. So like theoretically the vector math, which is what you use for games mostly and shaders and stuff like that, is equivalent to Ampere. It looks like it's all going to be clock dependent and memory dependent, of course. But like on paper, in terms of like raw width, that's equivalent. And then on the matrix side, which is where all the machine learning stuff happens, or a lot of the machine learning stuff happens, it seems like they're going way, way wider. You're going to be able to do more math than the Ampere cores will.
That's kind of shocking to hear.
Well, it's Intel. Well, so, you know, think about what their businesses are.
Okay, fair.
Hey, we sell stuff to consumers, but we also sell stuff into data centers. And guess what? Who loves machine learning?
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess everybody loves machine learning these days, but yes, you're not wrong. Like you said, they have not announced like clock speeds and memory bandwidth and stuff like that. So we don't know exactly how fast this stuff is, but it does seem remarkably feature complete on paper.
Yeah, I think so. I think like, that's fair.
I was not expecting to see an effort this immense from them, I guess.
I don't have any inside information here. My theory has always been that Intel has multiple teams working on the stuff at the same time. And they have the hey, here's our fallback. We're going to continue improving on the existing integrated stuff. And then I think my guess is that they've had multiple teams that haven't been able to keep up with what Intel and what NVIDIA and AMD are doing. So they get to the point that they're about to launch something, and then NVIDIA announces the next gen thing, and then, you know, they shit can that and start over again.
Right.
Now, this isn't coming out until early next year, at which point the 3080 cards, while supply limited, will be a year old. So it's entirely possible that this is going to come out around the time that NVIDIA releases a new card, and these are immediately last gen perf.
Fair.
I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, to be fair, yeah. If they can get into the ballpark of the current Ampere cards in terms of performance, that's not exactly a bad thing. Yes, it will not be bleeding edge compared to whatever NVIDIA has, but like, as supply constrained as the market is right now, I think even a good enough part from a third vendor is a pretty big deal, right? Like, just getting more supply of anything that is adequate out there, it seems like it would really alleviate a lot of those problems.
Well, they're making them in the same foundry that NVIDIA makes their cards, probably.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, actually. So, it's kind of zero sum in terms of supply, right?
Maybe it depends on what's the limit. But I mean, I think it's always good to have more people doing things. They're doing some actually really interesting stuff with the upscaling tech, which we should talk about. But I think even if they bomb in the consumer market for video cards, if they are appreciably faster at the machine learning math, the matrix math for data center and research and workstations, I think that's probably a win for Intel, and they can afford to iterate until they get to the point that they're releasing on the same cadence as NVIDIA and AMD.
Sure. And then does this seem scalable enough that it could scale down to the, I mean, could this become the basis of the new integrated GPUs in the CPU line?
So, I mean, it already kind of is, because I think the XELLP, which is, I think, the low power variant, is in the 11th gen cores, but it's on a different process. So this is a 7-nanometer process. That's those CPUs are 10-nanometer. And it seems like a kind of a janky 10-nanometer in a lot of cases. I haven't paid a lot of attention to that. The thing about when this is a GPU that is made to be a chiplet SoC GPU, if that makes sense. So in the future, maybe not chiplet, maybe not SoC, but like, imagine 4 years from now, we're doing chiplet Intel CPUs. You have a bunch of low power chiplets. You have a couple of high power chiplets.
I think
chiplet with like two of these cores on it.
I think you mean tiles.
Sorry, tile. My bad.
Can we stay on brand, please?
No, we can. Speaking of staying on brand, my favorite game to play in these is when another vendor is talking about a machine learning super sampling, and they're trying not to say, you know, like DLSS the entire
yes,
time.
Yes, it is a common reference point.
So the XESS, which is their upscaling thing, is neat. It seems neat. Very comparable to DLSS. Should take advantage of the extra matrix math. Yada yada. They have a video that looked pretty good, but I'm always a little skeptical of those because, you know, I don't think they're cooked, but it's easy to pick the part that makes it look real good.
Sure. I'm trying to find the code names for the various parts, including Alchemist, Battle Mage, and Druid, and Celestial.
Well, they ran out of rivers in the Northwest.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes,
I guess. And then they ran out of mountains, I think.
I suppose that's the case. Do you think, am I justified in feeling kind of warm and fuzzy about where competition is getting to in the GPU and CPU space? Like I think inarguably it is way more robust than it was 5 to 10 years ago, right? Like, AMD was like a non-entity in CPUs for a good long while.
Like, yeah, I think that's fair.
NVIDIA is still very dominant, but like, AMD is certainly making strides there. And now Intel seems to be putting in a pretty good effort here too. Like, it's just nice to see all this rapid progress, which seems to be driven by the competitive landscape.
Well, I mean, so there's anytime the underlying framework of technology changes, there's an opportunity for a non-leader to become the leader. And that's what AMD had, like, saw that they were behind in process technology compared to what Intel was doing. and so built something that was that worked better independent of process, what process they were on. Intel is paying for their process failures in the last with the 10 nanometer stuff now. And I think anytime something fundamental changes about how technology works, it's good for consumers because there will be a period of intense competition while we figure out what works best. And just to be clear, these aren't inexpensive things to figure out. These are $1 billion bets
right.
by these huge companies,
which again take years to play out.
Yeah, and like they're making decisions. They're like the chips that are coming to market now are based on decisions that were made 5 and even 10 years ago. So it's you know, this is the long game. Like think about this in terms of if you work in this business for 30 years, you get 3 full architectures, maybe.
Interesting. That's a lot like whiskey making. Those.
Yeah.
Reading about a little while back that, yeah, like if you're like a master distiller, you get like what, two and a half full rounds of product in your career.
Something like that.
Something
right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like I think it's, They're saying this is going to come out Q1 2022, the consumer parts. I'm interested to see what they look like. Mm-hmm. Like you said, more competition is good for everybody.
And more supply. Again, you know, we'll see how the foundry, how the fabrication supply chain holds up under this load, but hopefully.
So, I mean, from talking to Jesse a few weeks ago, the ASICs are the problem. Making the chips, if you can get the foundry time, is less of an issue,
okay.
I think. But I also have heard problems from people that work in like boule making that are saying that it's hard to get the component, like they're having chemical shortages, so they can't dope the boules appropriately to make the slices that they need and all that stuff. So
be careful doping the boules.
Look.
All right, last upheaval for this episode, OnlyFans.
The sexy site that doesn't not so sexy
that's,
anymore.
That's, man, I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but that went really well for Tumblr, didn't it?
Look, man, Tumblr was the horniest website on earth. It's like social network for the thirstiest, right? Mm-hmm, and then yes. Verizon bought it, was like, no, gotta get rid of this stuff.
I went and looked up the timeline for we are fully getting ahead of ourselves here, but I wrote down the timeline here. Yahoo bought Tumblr in 2013 for $1.1 billion in cash. Okay.
Congratulations, David Karp.
2013.
Yeah.
In December 2018, they banned adult content on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
In August 2019, Verizon, who at that time had become the owner of Tumblr, sold Tumblr to Automattic, which, as you said, the makers of WordPress.
Yeah.
For
and Gravatars.
And yes, apparently also. Anyway, Verizon sold Tumblr to Automattic for what was rumored to be under $3 million.
What? That's pocket change, man.
Not confirmed, but that was the rumor. So from 2013. So in roughly 6 years, it went from an acquisition price of $1.1 billion to being sold for less than $3
million. We could have done a Kickstarter and raised $3 million to buy Tumblr.
We could own Tumblr.
I mean, okay, so Tumblr is a weird example. There's another example of a porn previously porny site / app.
Oh, don't tell me. I'm trying to.
It's the next one on the list.
I'm not looking. I'm intentionally. Oh. It's not Snapchat, is it?
It is Snapchat.
Is it Snapchat?
Remember, Snapchat started as a way for teenagers to send dick pics to each other without being able to save them to the camera roll.
I'll take your word for that. Sure.
Yeah. That was what the local news told me at the time, at least.
Okay.
But no, they originally marketed Snapchat as a way to send racy pictures to your friends and lovers.
Sure.
Yeah. Without an option to save it to the camera roll. And then when iOS added the ability to take screenshots of your screen, they added a notification that was like, yo, somebody just took a screenshot of the nude that you sent them.
That is so awkward.
So then the awkward imagine. Conversation. But then they gradually became the place that you go to get like cool sunglasses and music stuff. I don't know. They made a concerted effort to move away from the dick pics market and into a less lewd endeavors.
But did they do that by instituting new policy?
No, you can. There's still a lot of sex workers that sell pictures and videos and stuff on Snapchat.
Like, okay, so there was no actual ban of that sort of thing there.
No, they didn't ban it. And to be clear, the thing OnlyFans is doing, we kind of got the cart above the head of the horse here. They're banning, I believe, explicit sexual content, which I have not seen defined in any way yet. But I assume it means like
the language I read was that simple nudity is still allowed. It's like explicit sexual acts are seem to be the kind of their
and
their dividing line.
I would not want this job for all the money in the world, but I would love to be able to listen to the conference room meetings that must have gone for 12 hours about the explicit line. Like, is touching yourself over clothes okay, but under clothes not? Like, what about, you know, simulated penetration versus penetration? Like, there is, we should put a content warning on this episode, by the way. But like, it's the conversations that have to happen in order to make this kind of policy and apply it to a user base as broad as OnlyFans is, because OnlyFans is enormous, right? It's a big fucking company at this
especially
point.
After the pandemic, they really, I don't think they were small before that, but it seems like they really, what did they bring in last year? It was a lot. I forget.
It was a lot. So, okay. So it's an interesting situation that now, before we get into the, why I think OnlyFans is interesting, and it's not because I'm a user.
You don't have to kink shame yourself.
Look, I got nothing against it. Like, I need to decide how much of my inner monologue I want to share here. So the thing about this is about 30 years ago. Now this is, I'm going to say some controversial stuff here and I'm probably going to get it wrong. So I apologize in advance. A lot of the anti-prune porn crusaders from the 70s and 80s switched over to being anti-trafficking and started going through the payment processors for sex workers.
Okay.
And
this
ended up with legislation like SESTA and FOSTA, which applied some really, really strong. Just to be clear, we are anti-trafficking. We are anti-child abuse. We're anti-people who are non-consensually being forced to share or participate in pornographic endeavors. Everyone agrees that's bad.
I too endorse those stances.
Yeah. However, the thing that the anti-porn crusaders realized is they could, like, rather than saying, hey, pornography and masturbation is bad, they went with, you know what's bad? Trafficking, human trafficking is bad. So let's then regulate this industry at a really high level and really aggressively, because nobody's going to say, no, we are against human we're pro human trafficking. And that campaign has been very successful because they've gone actually at legislators and payment processors and stuff like that. So OnlyFans, the morning we recorded this, came out and said, hey, we're doing this. We love you, OnlyFans community. We're doing this because we have banking and payment processing problems.
Yeah, let me read the actual language here, because it's they seem to be stinging from the criticism pretty strongly based on this wording. Dear sex workers, is how they began that tweet. The OnlyFans community would not be what it is today without you. The policy change was necessary to secure banking and payment services to support you. We are working around the clock to come up with solutions. Hashtag sex work is work. So,
yeah,
I don't know if this quite counts as backpedaling, but they definitely seem to be feeling it from the backlash.
So the same thing happened to Pornhub a few months ago, if you recall.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
The payment processors came at them. Now, just to be clear, Pornhub had larger problems because they were notoriously bad about moderating their content, to the point that, like, if somebody posted a non-consensual video of you, it was really hard to get it removed.
Ooh,
which is problematic and bad.
That is bad.
Because of that behavior, presumably MasterCard said, hey, we're not going to run your payments anymore if you don't fix this. So Pornhub went 100% verified, where you had to send an ID for every single person that's in every video on the site.
Oh, wow.
And anything that doesn't have that was removed.
Huh. No kidding.
Anyway. So that's the background. OnlyFans basically saying, hey, and if you don't know what OnlyFans is, it's basically Patreon for pornographers.
Yeah,
is how it's kind of started.
Or sex workers. I mean, it's very direct. Workers. It's very direct to consumer, though. There's no sleaze. You know, the person who's been cut out of the equation is the sleazy guy with three buttons unbuttoned on his shirt and the gold chains sitting in the Pasadena back office counting the money.
Yeah, the mustache and nogger height crowd is gone.
The sleazy cigar chomper, the Jackie Treehorn.
Exactly.
It's very direct from the person doing the work to the people who want to consume it. But hearing that stuff about legislation, like, I've always wondered why this was the case, because I very cynically have always thought, like, isn't business? Like at the end of the day, aren't corporations and, you know, like banks and payment processors and everybody, like, they're just out to make a buck. And so I never quite understood where the moralizing came in that made those financial conduits shy away from this kind of work. So hearing that there is that kind of moral crusade aspect to it historically is pretty interesting.
Yeah, the SESTA FOSTA legislation that came out last year, the year before, is one of the big drivers here.
Okay.
And that imposes moderation requirements on people that produce or distribute adult content.
Okay.
Here's the thing that OnlyFans has going for it, right? They have the most creator-friendly payment and marketing and business infrastructure of any of the content creation sites that I've looked at. They used to pay in a week. I don't think that's the case anymore. Whereas for a long time, Twitch paid 90 days after revenue was taken. Patreon pays every 30 days. These terms are good. More than that, they give you incredibly granular control over your offering as a content creator. So if you want to do photos, if you want to do videos, if you want to do live, if you want to do pay-per-view, if you want to do content that's exclusive to one user, they give you an infrastructure to create and distribute that stuff inside the platform, whereas nobody else does that range. And they let you set the pricing manually. So if you, like, on Twitch, the pricing for a tier one sub on every single channel on Twitch is $5. And the percentage of that $5 that goes to the creator varies based on their deal with Twitch. On Patreon, you can set that number, but you don't have the ability to do pay-per-view content. You don't have the ability to do stuff that's locked off to specific tiers outside of audio. There's no video distribution on Patreon. Incredible. The flexibility that OnlyFans gives a independent content creator is enormous, which is, I think, going to be their approach when they come out of this. Because yesterday, after I tweeted that Patreon offers a good split and good terms for their content creators, somebody from Patreon emailed me on my public facing address, was like, "Hey, we'd like to hook you up with VIP OnlyFans service."
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah. Huh. Weird, right?
No.
It's kind of a weird digital gentrification thing, because it's like they built this business on the I'm air quoting seedy sex worker business. And now that it's big and they have this big infrastructure and they can afford to support the normies, you know, they put in a Starbucks and a Whole Foods and they're expecting me to roll over from Twitch and hop on the OnlyFans train.
Like what you're saying is they built a business on content that everyone consumes, but everybody pretends is like they're above, I guess, is what, you know,
exactly.
Like everybody consumes this stuff, but they all sneer at it at the same time. And now the second that they got huge, they want to discard that base of workers for more socially acceptable stuff.
Let's say nudge it off to the side a little bit, you know. Right.
Yes. Do you see any other outcome from this than them just sticking? I mean, it sounds like they're trying to explore some other solution. I don't know what that could mean, though.
So it's unclear to me whether this is going to be a Tumblr or a Snapchat, right? I think I really don't know. I think if content creators, well, first off, the content creator situation on Twitch is unfortunate. There's stuff happening right now, especially in the African-American community on Twitch that is awful in terms of like hate rating and stuff like that. And Twitch is having a hard time responding to it. Or if they are, then they're not talking to anybody about it. So people are upset with Twitch pretty much all the time. When Mixer went away, the main alternative to Twitch went away, unless you want to go over to YouTube, which has its own host of Google related problems. So there's not really a Twitch competitor right now for all intents and purposes in that space. And like, there's a real argument in favor of something like OnlyFans, which basically lets you build a Patreon style community and a Twitch community on the same platform with more granular tools to give you better control over your deliverables.
Yeah. More infrastructure to deliver that stuff. Right.
Yeah. Like one of the things we talked about was if we wanted to do video that was Patreon only, we have no real way to do it here.
Yeah.
On Patreon.
There are third party solutions, but they're by far not perfect.
And they're incredibly expensive.
And they're very expensive.
Yeah. So like that's interesting. Like if people look at it like that, then I see a business model that includes them not having like, you know, the sexually explicit material that they're worried about right now. I also like in a world where blockchain gas prices weren't ridiculous because the networks are overextended right now, I could see OnlyFans switching to just taking payment on Ethereum or Bitcoin or something like that in a way that is not like that's kind of what that stuff is for. But the problem right now is on Ethereum, especially the price of doing a transaction is so high that often the transaction cost would exceed like a base OnlyFans subscription for most of the channels. So I don't know if that works. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird place to be for the OnlyFans. And I definitely feel for the people who've built audiences on those sites, on that site over the last few years. Like it's like that's hard work. And
for sure,
like having your platform pulled out from under you is not a feeling that's good.
Well, especially given how many stories you've seen in the last year of people who have turned to this platform when they lost their jobs due to the pandemic or using it as a supplement to try to make ends meet because times are extra rough right now. Like, I mean, this is just an extreme example though of the peril of relying on these giant corporations, you know, to sustain your livelihood. You are subject to whatever, you know, their whims, their kind of snap policy decisions. Like well, you don't have I mean, a lot the, of recourse. If all of your eggs are in one basket, they can kind of make your life very miserable. Very difficult at the drop of a hat.
The benefit is you don't have. What's the right way to say this? The benefit is you don't have to build the infrastructure around sharing whatever the form of content is you create. So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to host your podcast. You don't have to host your live streams. You don't have to pay for certain video hosting costs. The downside is that, like you said, when they make a policy change, it can absolutely destroy your business.
Yeah. At the same time, we both came from a company that did all of that stuff itself. And
yeah, we spent an unbelievable amount of money doing that.
And when we know exactly how expensive and labor intensive it is to do all of that stuff yourself. So yeah. Both solutions are problematic, let's say.
It's hard. It's hard out there for content creators, whether you're streaming games on Twitch or a sex worker. So, yeah, I mean, I guess solidarity for the folks on OnlyFans. And we hope that hopefully OnlyFans comes up with a solution that works for everybody. And also, I'm kind of curious. I almost want to take up the VIP offer just to see what the reaction on OnlyFans is. Like, I can't imagine that the community there is going to be super thrilled about some old beardy guy playing video games.
Hey, look, everybody's got their thing.
That's true.
Don't sell yourself short.
I'm not showing my butt, Brad.
Okay. That's a personal decision. that's the power of controlling your own content. You can do what you're comfortable with.
There you go. That's exactly right. No one tells me what to do.
That's right. Sir. Yeah. Except our lovely patrons.
That was a good segue.
Wow. Wonderful people who support this podcast.
Yes. Every week, we thank all of our patrons, everybody who supports the show. As always, Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod is 100% listener supported. We don't take any money from OnlyFans
not yet.
I mean, maybe we could do video podcasts over there. Brad and Will Made an OnlyFans. But yeah, here's the takeaway. If you're on the Patreon, you get access to the fabulous TechPod Discord. You get at the $5 tier and higher, you get access to one patron exclusive episode a month, where sometimes we take the bad questions from the Q&A episode and go through them.
Hey, there are no bad questions. Okay.
Sometimes there are bad questions, Brad. Thanks, Scoot. But the TechPod Discord is the jewel in the Patreon cap. I think you have access to fabulous people who probably share at least some of your interest. And if they don't, and you share your interest, I bet you'll find people who are into the thing that you're into and maybe didn't even know it.
Yeah. Like you could, for example, be excited about the new version of Debian that just released and chat with somebody who used to be a Debian developer about it.
Or you're like, hey, there's a Quake remake. And then somebody's like, oh, yeah, I worked on that.
Right.
Like,
oh, yes. What? Yes. Somebody, awesome. Yes. Somebody who would. Yes.
Did we
fascinate a lot of people in a lot of fascinating lines of work on that server?
And fascinating hobbies if you're not in fascinating lines of work. Yeah. Did we talk about, I don't know if I can talk about that. Well, we have people that help with career advice and with, like, people are talking about the choices that they've made. You have people at all stages of their careers. So you can talk to people who've been there and done the things that you've done before. I find it to be an incredible resource, and I've lived a blessed life. So
yeah,
I think that's really cool.
The word for it to me is edifying. Like,
yeah,
there's just a lot to learn from a community like that.
Well, and people share things that I get in there and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that we have people who are telling us like just the level of expertise and knowledge and life experience and skill that people have shared is incredible. Yeah. So I love spending time there every day. And you can too by going to patreon.com/techpod. That's patreon.com/techpod.
And in the course of doing so, help keep this podcast going.
Yeah, and a very special thank you, as always, to our executive producer tier patrons, Andrew Slowski, the Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chapel, Joel Krauska, Twinkle Twinkie, David Allen, and James Kamick. Thank you all so much for your support. Yes. We really appreciate it. And I guess that's the end of the show this week.
That's right. I guess you got to go start packing.
Well, no, I'm not going anywhere for a week still.
Oh, well.
But I do have to, like, I have to look at everything on my desk and think about what comes and what goes.
So you're not taking the stream machine?
No, I can't. It's a small car, dude.
You're being a single box. You're going to single box it.
So I'm going to single box it. We're going old school. Nice. So I got that face cam, and I got a light, and I got a tripod for that. So I think I'm good on that side. I got the headset. I'm not going to take the boom mic, I don't think. So I might sound different week after next for a month. I'm not taking the big mixer, taking the little digital audio interface, taking the Stream Deck.
Okay.
That thing's important.
You're packing up I've had a Stream Deck sitting here in a box for 8-10 months that I should really set that thing up.
Brad, as much as you like scripting things, it's going to change your life.
Oh, when we talked about Monput, my little command line thing to switch monitor inputs and so forth. You
mean the one to control.
Yep. That's the one. Somebody tweeted at me saying they had done something similar and then bound those script functions to buttons on the Stream Deck.
Yep.
So they can just change all the inputs on their monitors by hitting Stream Deck buttons instantly, which I really need to set up.
The problem I have is that my Stream Deck is hooked up to the computer. It's not hooked up to the monitor. I would want to change.
Mm. Well, now you just have to send those commands over SSH from one computer. From the computer it is hooked up to the one that's not.
I could just buy a second Stream Deck.
Always a way to make it work.
Exactly. We will see you all next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.